go to Kiddusha, if you will. Akisha Vayali Yitzir. Okay, but just briefly, I have this psak din I told you about. So I wanted to tell you some of the other things which they considered and rejected. What to do with this case, which is also on this case. One is, they said, the Megarish and Tanai of you know, Me'achshav or Im, and they say you can't do that. They reject it right away because this is a V in between. That's no good. So this is a straw man. Then they say, well, write a get where the commander should be given after the husband is no longer with it. So they say that's also no good because we already learned in the Ran, beginning of the Parak Shvi, that you can't do that because you have the Baal to be clear mind all the way until the Nesina. The truth is, a rush disagrees that we saw that, but it's hard to pass them against the Ran. I think the Shulchan Aruch is like the Ran, if I'm not mistaken. So therefore, that's rejected. Then what I want to talk about, they have the question of divorce her immediately and remarry her out of Tanai, conditional marriage. Shemishtata, that he becomes, never loses his marbles. Yibatlo akidushin lemafreya. And quote Ramah, kufnun zayin sivdal, which is the same thing. What's this? Conditional marriage? You in conditional marriage? Conditional marriage? What's this? It sounds very ominous. So we have to look up kufnun zayin sivdal. What does it say there? I must talk about the case of a woman wants to marry her very wonderful chosen. But she finds out he has a brother who's a no good nick. Says the Ramah as follows. I'm a Kaddish Isha of Yeshlo Ach Muma. The brother is an apokaris, he's a convert, converted to Christianity. He's not going to give any chalitza. Yochol Kaddish Lahastos to Tanai Kofel, Shemtipol of Neimuma, Liyavam, Shalo Temekudeshis. Who says to the Mari Bruna? This is the remarkable Ramah of Kiddush Nala Tanai, unbelievable Ramah. Now, there's a whole literature here. Ooh, wow. Piskei Tshuva, as it goes on for most of the page, discussing this question, whether you can make the Tanai, and the logistics of making the Tanai, what kind of Tanai kofel, what nusach should you use. But apparently it was used even as recently as the Chasam Sofer, 19th century, he's writing Tshuva, so what the nusach of the Tanai is. So apparently this was actually accepted. So here too, let's make a Tanai. This is, of course, part of the, just to give you a brief synopsis of the two books that were written. I think I told you before. No, I guess not. There was a book written, and it came up in the end, over 100 years ago, when there was civil marriage in France. So the rabbi in France said, you know, that people getting civilly divorced is terrible. And there's no get. It was unheard of in Jewish life before. There was always, you know, there was autonomy for the Jewish rabbinic establishment, which was always, of course, Orthodox. All of a sudden now, the Jews getting married, getting divorced with a civil divorce, with no get. That's a disaster. So some guy had an idea. Make Kiddush Nala Tanai. But in case there'll be a civil divorce, so the Kiddush does nothing from the beginning. No? Great idea, no? It's Ramah. Ramah. So all the poskim at the time disagreed with it. Came up again 50 years later, and again they disagreed. In 1930, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, I forgot who, gathered together the letters of Chachmei Yisrael for the last 50 years about this Shaila, put all the famous names that we know, and he entitled his book, Ein Tanai V'Nisuin. Nice title for a book. Ein Tanai V'Nisuin. The thinking is that even though he made a Tanai, but when you came to the bottom line of Venos, Adam Osa Bilos, Bilos Nus, that he's not going to be willing to have his be a conditionally znus, and therefore it's assumed that they're really married. It's a Ramah.
Is that really worried about znus? So at the time that he had a beard, he was married. So later on, it's talked that at the time he was married, he had a beard, he was married.
Well, that's not necessarily the case. That's not necessarily
the
case.
I'm saying the condition should be both. At the time he had the beard, as far as he was concerned, now he was married. Later on,
comes out.
But he doesn't want.
That's not. We never said that. What Tosfos? Let's review again. Which Tosfos do you need? Show me. My memory is not so good. But let's go back over here. So the question is this a valid Tanai in all cases? So the Chasam Sofer and the Tshuva, I think it's Simon Kuf Yud, I looked it up, says It's no good. In general terms, it's no good. We assume that he wants to have the marriage to be an absolute marriage and doesn't want to have a condition. Why? Two reasons, he says. One, no one wants to have children born out of wedlock. And if there's no condition, the children born out of wedlock. Two, no man can stand it if someone else is with his wife without a get. He's alive, and someone else's wife is without a get, he can't stand it. Even though the reality is that the halacha says she never was his wife, but that's fun and games. He knows that the maestro, she was functioning as husband and wife for many years. Now she's with another man with no get. Man can't handle that. Neither of those two considerations apply in our case. Why? By definition, there are no children. Because it's talking about the case of Yibum. Right? There are no children. And number two, the man's not alive. Which place? We'll take a look. And the man's not alive to see this happen, because you know it's only going to be retroactively known after he's dead. Let's take a look at Pei Aleph in the base. Well, let's look, but we have to look. Pei Aleph in the base, the top choices. Pei Shammai Savri, Odom Bo Bilas Nus. I forgot to be honest, Pei Shammai, Ami Pei Shammai. Then the man in El Arus from the Sus. Umefarsh of Yosef Rabbi Tamad Bei Shammai Shemein Osam Odom Osa Bilaso Bilas Nus. Ulahachi Nesuas and Yecholos Lamein. To Lava Dat Adachi Nazbo. Ika Lameimar. To Osam Kevin Shurinu Shekidsha. Vada Eino Rota Livo Bilaso Bilas Nus. Avulahacha Shalorino Akidushin. Savri Bei Shammai Hold. The Boel Bilas Nus. Silo Savi, they all are men of the most of the Lord's nuts. Fiafa Gabdis, Lu Hosso. Afilun Nisuos, Mimanos. Haina Mishum, the cave, and Shayade Kidushin, Finisuin, Bo'oleho, Lochoshiv Lei, Bilas Nus, Kadamina Hosso. Appear. Please give me a more of your vomits. Let's take a look.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Hold on a second. Thank you. Yeah, but
he also
cancels the same as tonight cancels. So Eli is saying a good svara, the same as Beis Hillel seems to be saying. He did a halachically valid thing. He went through the proper channels. He did what's called a kiddushin. It's called kiddushin miyun. Kiddushin miyun is an expression which the post which means it's kiddushin only to the extent that can be cancelled by a miyun, as opposed to that which requires a get. So they were looking. I don't consider this bilasnus. I did what's right. I shikin that miyun, which Alpi Lomdus undoes the marriage retroactively. B'shaita was good. So if that's the case, should come out that even if the case were the civil divorce case, will be undo it retroactively. So what? B'shaita, it should be good. Oh, good, very good question. Hold on a second. So first, I open the Gemara for another reason. My time is that is the Gemara, but he ain't tonight been suing. This is the source for the name of that sefer. Ein Tanai Benisuin. Okay? That's what it says. Ein Tanai Benisuin. This is it's Beis Shammai. It's true. This is Beis Shammai. The Suah tomorrow, and us in the memory, Ein Tanai Benisuin. Ein Tanai Bechupa, the Gemara says. Beis Hillel. That's the first day. Then it says no. A different shot in Beis Shammai. And all the most of us have been us. So that's what our Tosfos is called. Ubeis Hillel. Ubeis Hillel. Kev and Dika Kiddush Nitzuba. Lo Osel Meimar. The Bilas O Bilas Nus. So what does that mean? Rashi is a different shot. Rashi's shot of the Kuvzayin Yevamos is that since Ein Adam also bilas of bilas nus, look, Rabbanan, this institution of a minor marriage, the marriage of a minor, not which the father is alive when it's Kedusha Ketana Daraisa, which is a whole issue in and of itself. But this kind of case in which the father died and the mother, the brothers are marrying her off before the Bar Mitzvah is a rabbinical innovation. I spoke about it on Tuesday. We don't like innovations. So why did the rabbis make this innovation? Says Rashi, Lefi she'ein k'dei shelo yinagavu minhag hefker. Chazal wanted there should be this institution because the people were very loose in those years. And they were afraid that this 11-year-old running around, if she's not tied down to her husband, it's going to be bad news. Can you imagine this? We shouldn't think that sin was born in New York City. So they want it. So Beis Shammai is saying, if there's going to be a miyun, men won't do it. No man's going to want to be involved in this relationship with this 11-year-old girl for fear that she will be mimayin at the end of the day. And it'll turn out that his marriage was, in effect, sinful. Bilas nus. And Beis Hillel say no. What does Beis Hillel say? Listen carefully to the words of Beis Hillel. And Beis Hillel say, get the exact words. So, Beis Hillel say, Kevin, the Kiddush Niksuba, lo asu lememar dibilaso bilasnus. He's not saying whether they're married or not. All he's saying is that in this guy's perception, since it's a Kiddush Niksuba, so it won't be said by this guy who's coming into the marriage that it is a bilasnus. He's not worried about if he's going to get into the relationship. That's what's going on in the Gemara Daf Kuf Zayin. Now, what we're talking about is a different story. We're talking about, so what Ellie is saying is like this. If Basil is right psychologically, that a person is willing to get into a relationship with a woman who he knows can undo it retroactively with Yumiya, that means he doesn't view this as Bilas Nus because it was legitimized by the sanction of Kiddushin Derabbana. So too, he's saying the guy will, look, Kiddushin Aksuba, he'll go into this marriage, and he will not say to himself, hey, how can I live with this woman? She's going to walk out of me or get a civil divorce. That will be nothing. Because you see in the Gemara, the guy's not worried about that. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Unless to say, Ali, maybe, that in this case, there's official sanction of the Chazal. They said, we are instituting Kedusha Miyun, what we call, for 11-year-old. So she says, look, I'm following, I'm playing it by the books. As opposed to with some kind of an independent tonight that's imposed by the Masada Kedushin, who tells him to do this Kedushin al tonight, where maybe he in the back of his mind knows that the rabbi is not quite the Chachmei HaTalmud, the Chachmei HaMishnah HaTalmud, and therefore he doesn't want that to be uprooted in his lifetime, and therefore it's Baal Hashem Kedushin, maybe. But you're raising it, but it's a good point. I appreciate you bringing the point. Okay, so that's the Kedin of Kedushin al Tanai. Big fight. Rav Kook, Zechron Levracha, is quoted in that same for Ein Tanai Benesuin. Says, look, even if you'll say that they're right in theory, that you can make every single Kedushin al Tanai, and the civil divorce will be uprooted, it's no way to have a Jewish marriage. Every Jewish marriage will have a situation where a woman can have a divorce on demand and go into a secular court, and it'll turn out they were never married, the kids are out of wedlock. And even if technically speaking it would be valid, it's no way to go. That's Rav Kook's mahalach. The other is the Chasam Sofer's mahalach, was no good on technical grounds. It only works over here where, number one, there are no children involved. Number two, he'll never live to see the day. So then, he's willing to have a situation where it'll ultimately be a bilas nus in effect. But he should live to see the day, and there should be possibly children. This nobody wants. That's the change. That's the Mikra Dinah distinction. Rav Kook said it says here's a limited case of an achmumar, and it's only they'll get to an Easter lav. The whole thing is only about the yivam of the shuk, which we're not belittling, but it's still only a lav. As opposed to over here talking about Easter misa of Easter sish proper, we cannot be made. That's the consensus in the 60s, or I think, or the 70s. A rabbi wrote a book called Yesh Tanai B'Nisuin. That you say eight times, I'm saying Yesh Tanai B'Nisuin. And he just rehashed all the old arguments, but he loses because there's only one rabbi, and he's not of the same stature of the other rabbanim who wrote in 1930. So, therefore, there's nobody in the world now that I know about who makes Tanai B'Nisuin on a normal basis. But He was suggested in this Nebuchadnezzar, this extreme Alzheimer's case, it's quoted over here in this tshuva, maybe we should make a nesu'in al tanai. Now, here you have some of the milas. What's the tanai? It's not going to be a tanai, it will not be mizbato until it becomes Nebuch. He'll sit to the point, he's no longer Baruch to give a get. So he'll never see in his sanity, in his sane state, he'll never see that this woman is going to marry somebody else. He'll never see it. So therefore, that consideration is one second, is not good. Of course, in this particular case, there could be children, but the truth is, at this point, the guy's Alzheimer's. I can't imagine he's going to have any children. I mean, you know, maybe he's physically capable of having children, but on a practical basis, I don't think they're going to go have children now with a husband who's in the early stages of Alzheimer's. You know, he's in his 40s, she's whatever, late 30s, let's say. She can still have children physically. Go have children for the guy who's in a Nebuch, being incapacitated, they predict within a number of few years. Just, again, it can happen, but it's not as serious a consideration as a couple who's in their 20s if they're married and likely to have children. But Kitza, there's what to be said, in my opinion, that maybe this Kiddushin al Tanai should be the best way to go in this circumstance, perhaps. I have to tell you that here he doesn't like it for the following reason. There's a whole tshuva against it. He says, well, you know why you can't have it? Because it's B.S. Nus. Yes, no, what do you mean? Says, look, here, the doctors say that there's going to be nishtata. So, Nebuchadnezzar has Alzheimer's. It's going to happen. So what happened in 1 year, happened in 2 years. So what do you mean? It's going to be a B, which is not a B.S. Nus. Odds are, chances are, that this marriage is going to be terminated retroactively, right? Because of the fulfillment of the condition that's going to become Nebuchadnezzar. Not to be compared to 2 20-year-olds who get married. True, there's an achmuma, true. But look, what did I say? Rome, noshim, misabris, the oldest. We know that a very significant majority of couples that get married, Baruch Hashem, if they're healthy, that they have children. So therefore, when the couple is living together, so it's, you can't say it's a bias nus, because the chances are very strong. It's going to be a bit of Torah's Kiddushin, because it's going to have children, there'll be no problem. But there is a problem over here, Rabbi Osai. I have to be honest. They're trying to make a distinction, but Lechora, it can't be. Why? What happens? The couple got married in their 20s. Baruch Hashem, they had Oyd Yishama, was singing and then they got married under the stars. She has as many children as the stars in the sky. And everything is gewaldic. Rabbi Osai, 50 years have passed. He's celebrated the golden Chasana. He's 70 and she's 70. Nebuch, they have no children. And he has a 50-year-old brother who's a mumma, right? He's 20 years younger than him, who's a convert to Christianity. Now, they're still married, they can still have Bia, and kind of assume, they're still also going to say the odds, where are the odds now? If you were Jimmy the Greek, where would you bet now? What are the odds now, as far as they're having a child and she's 70 years old? Right? Or the odds that the brother can die first. The mumma can die first. But the mumma is only 50, and he's 70. Now, if you're an insurance actuary, we have some actuaries here, so the chances of this 50-year-old dying before the 70-year-old, it can happen, but it's certainly a pretty small percentage. And having kids at 70 is no percentage. I mean, sorry, Maynard was 90, but that was a long time ago. And so this isn't, we're doing that kind of case. And they're still able to live together. So you see, even though it's a minority chance. Oh. So this bothered me also. Oh. So I think I saw, I didn't have time to look, I think the Nodabi Yehuda asked this question. I think he asked this question. And I think he gives the following answer. He says, look, the man is 70, his wife is 70, the brother is 50. You know, 70 years old, he's in the peak of his health. Baruch Hashem, he's alert, he's alive, he's well. Yeah. But you know, I think that's what I'm going to be able to say. I think so. That most people don't die suddenly. Most people, that's a fact even to this day. There's some people never die of a heart attack or just in 1 second, an aneurysm in 1 second. It can happen at any age. Shani Rachem. But most people, you know, Yaakov Avinu asked for choli, the Gemara says. He asked the people, next week's parasha, that people should be sick. They shouldn't just die on the spot. They should have a chance to say goodbye to their families. You know, give a bracha, Birchas Yaakov, we have next Shabbos. But that's the way of the world. Again, with certainly with exceptions. But the way of the world is called the majority of the cases of people, they get sick, and from their sickness, they pass away. I mean, am I right? Just look around today, everyone knows that from the experience of the people who, in their communities, and their families, grandparents, whatever. That's what normally happens, most of the time. I think it's Nabiru who says, okay, so this man gets sick, and looks serious, and the doctor's afraid this is a sickness he's not going to recover from, at that point in time, he can write her a get. We've been through this before. Get Shchimra. We know about this. And if he writes her a get Shchimra at that point in time, it'll turn out that the marriage was a perfectly valid marriage. The only way the marriage will turn out to be an invalid marriage is if he dies, Nebuch, leaving no children, with the brother of Uma who's still alive, then it's no good. But that possibility that he's going to die with no children, you could say it's 100%. Or whatever, 99.9%. Okay? That he's going to die before the brother is also a very high percentage. But if you throw into the hopper the possibility that he'll write a get for his wife before he dies, when he gets very sick, you say, listen, I'm very sick, as what Yaakov Avinu said, I'm about to die, so I'm giving you a bracha and I'm giving you a get. He gives his wife a bracha with a get, and this way, in retrospect, all the bias will be as had to the gamre. So if it doesn't work, because he dies suddenly, no, but there was a robe on the side that the bias should be met. I believe that another Yehuda says so.
Did you write a get now and another get later?
No. He never wrote a get. He made a Kedushin al Tanai. Right. When he's 20 years old, a Kedushin al Tanai. And until age 35, I guess there's a good chance that she could still have a baby. But after that, it can't get less and less and less. It's getting older and older and older. And the brothers, so the chance becomes it's gewalt. So there'll be a majority chance statistically that he's going to die with no children and the brother will survive him. So to get out of it, so then how can they have to be together? Such a strong chance to be a beer's nose? The answer may be, but he can always give a get before he dies. So that possibility eliminates the majority. So then I was going to say, if that's the case, nobody's right. Here too, the guy right now is certainly clear. He's certainly of sound mind, is able to give a get. Now, we said already yesterday, Alzheimer's is gradual. Gradual. See, how the physician says, you know, he's gradually slipping. He's gradually slipping, he's slipping, he's slipping, he's slipping. When it gets to the point that he said, you know, I don't know anymore, this looks like it's gonna slip in the very near future, he can write a get at that point in time. Right? This would be a second get in this case. In this case, they were married perfectly. They had a bunch of kids. Now he has pre-Alzheimer's. So they say, write a divorce for the first marriage. Get a new Kiddushin out tonight. And have in mind that, you know, we're doing this now because we don't know. It could just suddenly fall beneath the threshold in 1 second. Should be an aguna. But the expectation is it'll gradually deteriorate over years. So it could be a year, it could be 2 years, it could be 5 years, whatever it'll be. But presumably, just before he sinks under, the doctor has to say, you better do it now. Within the next month, 2-3 months, he's going to Nebuch. So then they can write the get then. And they write the get then it turns out that the Kiddushin was a perfectly valid Kiddushin, and the B.O.S. was the miscarriage of marriage. If they blow it, they goof it, he just has to take a sudden downturn, then it'll turn out that the Kiddushin was not, no Kiddushin, it was a B.O. without a Kiddushin. But that could be avoided by this other expectation to write another get when just before he goes under. That's what I would suggest as a possibility to make in this particular case a Kiddushin al Tanai. I want to explain that I'm against Kiddushin al Tanai in almost all cases. This may be an exception.
Does the second child of the couple still apply?
Because they were children.
In general, I'm talking about not the children on the other one. I mean, is it true in the world today?
But people, what?
People wouldn't want to see their
wife. It seems to me, you know, people, I think even today. Now, Elliot is younger than me, so he thinks that the world is so loose now. Now I have cases of men who tell their wives, "Hey, go with this man, go with this man, yeah, go with this guy." You know, wife swapping. You ever heard of this? The Yankees had a wife swapping case. Yeah. In the 70s already, there was a famous wife swapping scandal, the New York Yankees. Probably before you were born. wife swapping. Some two famous Yankees. Yankees weren't doing so well those years. Maybe that's why. Sam and Hashemayim. So they had two Yankees swapped wives. Ui. And the Gemara speaks about they had this. It's not a Yankee invention. They had it in the time of the Rashi quotes in the Chumash something else, but I don't go into it now. But so he said, so you see, people don't care. But that's these are Meshugoyim, Menuvolim, Meshchasim. I think the average Jewish person getting married to that Moshe of Yisrael still doesn't want, there's not a wife swapper. And he doesn't want Chas V'Shalom that he just can't see his wife with another man while he's still alive. Didn't give her a get. I think it would bother him. Maybe I'm still an old-fashioned old fogey. I don't know. I am. Huh? No, I'm not worried. The Chassam Sefer says that to forestall that. No, but to forestall that, he has an absolute kedushin. He's not going to. He's mevagel the tzayin effect.
She has a statement that she gets married also, and she says, "I'm not getting married."
It's a very good question. The question becomes: it's a good question. They talk about it. Let's say the Chassam Sefer is right. He's not going to allow it. He doesn't want any such tonight because it takes two. He made it tonight with her, right? And she has to, if he wants to marry her completely, has to be with her knowledge. And she's not about her on the tonight. It's a good question. They talk about it. Maybe we have a chance to talk about it maybe on Sunday. I don't know, that's a whole different issue. Maybe. That's a very good point you raised. A very good point. A good point. Okay. I have to say what happened in the case that we're dealing with. The real case. What really happened at the end? This shoe was really written Tavshin Nun Ches. Now we're at Tavshin Samach. What happened? So this is what happened. Rabbi say, interesting thing happened. The decision was taken that all these halachic points are too risky. Kedushin Al Tanai, too risky. His Shor Zicha, too risky. That's against the Beferosh Perish Mishnais. The other things that don't work at all. So you know what happened? The man gave his wife a simple straight gift, quietly, no one knows about it. Gave her a get. So normally give a get, you have to get out of the house. You can't be in the house. You have to be out of the neighborhood. It all got wholesome. It turned out, as an Issa Yichud Gomer, it turned out, and if they're together in the same house, you could argue that they're at least suffering collusion again because of what we just learned. It turned out, you know, in our, you know, it was a very sensitive issue. So the local rabbi broached it with the woman after months and months of pimpling back and forth, in her hair. And it was a pimple ashov, in a certain sense. Why? Because when he told her that, you know, there's an issue with him, oh, rabbi, my husband has been unable to have beer for 6 years. As we rabbis thought, we don't know anything about it. We thought, even the doctors thought, we thought the mind goes before the body. Thought he could have Alzheimer's, he could be even in advanced state, but you know, he said his body is still only 40. His mind may be nebuch, but turns out, at least in this case, that I guess certain parts of the body, which are dependent on certain things in the brain, went first. So all the whole pull-in was for naught. That's the question. We learned Issa Yichud, we learned Kiddushin, that was 3 years ago, 3 years ago. We had a whole Arichas. Whether it's an Issa Yichud with someone who's not a barbiya, not so pushed, not pushed at all, like Machlokas Aposkim. Is an Issa Yichud when the barbiya is impossible? Normally we'd say we'd be machmir, no question. Normally you have to be machmir. But this is not a normal situation. This is a situation of a shas adchak, godol ma'od, a terrible shas adchak. I would go further than that. I would tell her, and I'm not involved in this particular situation anymore, I would tell her she should go to mikveh. Because she's a young woman. She's got a mikveh. Because, number one, it will limit the Issa, assuming there might be an Issa Yichud, it will limit to an Issa Yichud Pnuya, as opposed to Issa Yichud Nida, big difference. She's a Pnuya, she's single. And number two, she's still helping him out. And he's helping with this, you know, touching him, all kinds of things. And whatever, I don't know what other kind of contact exists between the two parties. If she's going to the mikveh, so she's a Pnuya. And she's a Pnuya Tahora. Huh? Maybe it is, but I'm not telling you to. For a 20-year-old, I'm not saying it. But for this kind of situation, could be it's mutter. What? Oh, normally we say a single woman's not allowed to chem in the rivash, not to go to the mikveh. But here, it's different. Here, yeah, so no one knows that she's divorced, that she doesn't go to the mikveh. Could be a psamaris. No one's going to know about the. I don't know, Lanier's dieti might be the right thing to do. But again, I wasn't involved, I lost track of the case, I don't know what happened exactly. In any event, but the chash that we have in the Shulchan Aruch, that there was a second marriage because of the, which is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, he's not a Bar Hochi, can't do it. So the din of our mission, Pei Aleph, hein, not true in this case. Yeah. True. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's better. Shouldn't go. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know what they're doing. But that was the punchline. After we're pooping all the much, the beer's going to kill the gats, going to kill this, and this ate the dome with that. It's not a Bar Hochi never. Very sad. Okay, what I really want to talk about more in this context is a little bit about civil marriage, which just comes up right over here in the Sugya. I know most of those, but I told you, I promised you, Glenetta, to talk about other things today. So maybe on Sunday, we will pick up this sugya of civil marriage. Now, in case you finished the Ma'amakobos, which you may have, I will not be here. I have to give a shiur early on, since it's time of Sibur. Well, we'll have shiur regular time, 11:30, we'll have a son, he's staying 11:30. So, what I'd like you to prepare for Sunday, if you've finished everything in the previous Ma'amakobos, is the sugya of Mokom HaGet. Where's Mokom? I'm going to show you right now. Please go to look it up. Mokom HaGet is a Tosfos, Rabosai, Peyam and Aleph. Pay him an hour, we talked about Makom HaGet. B'Shem Iro. That's where the sugya comes up. Alright? And you'll also see it in the Rosh on this sugya. Talks about Makom HaGet. Let's see which siman is it in. Siman Tes talks about Makom HaGet. You do the Tosis. With the Rosh, you're not going to get. And then, if you finished all that, you can start looking at the Shulchan Aruch. So this is a whole siman, Kuf Chav Ches. An entire siman in Shulchan Aruch devoted to Mokom HaGet. The quality of siman in the back, in the Mordechai, about the rivers. That's going to be the topic for next week. But on Sunday, again, I want to talk a little bit about the, originally about the, you know, the civil marriages, maybe a little about time is Tibur. Maybe at the end, we'll just learn this Tosfos in the Rosh, if we can. The mission on Monday morning, there'll be a new list of Ma'amakamas, which will cover the sugya of Makom then. Okay? Now we'll talk about some of old chayvas that I owe you. The sugya of marriage. Yes, Khan. Well, that's what we spoke about. It's not so clear. Yeah. Yichud is the Rabbanan. That's the first. Come on. Yichud is Aser. Yichud is also with a even a Pnuya Tahora. That's the Gzera that was made subsequently. But Nida might also be there. Maybe the rice is the question. Go to the mikveh, pass the salva. Rabosai, we now to today's river kettle and bird point, which is going to be divided into two parts. The first part will be the shorter one, which is chapter 6 in this book about female nature. And the second, which will be the longer one, will be about the terrible attribute of anger, which comprises fully one third of this book, is about anger. All right, and Musa goes now to you, go to me. Goes to people who are married, people who are going to getting married. So, Rabbi Feldman begins by discussing the superior emotional sensitivity that a woman has. She shrieks with joy over good news. She's crying at a funeral. Nosha Rachmani is saying. They have again, this is only on average. Obviously, there are exceptions to the rule. There could be cold-hearted women and men who cry like babies all the time. But we're talking about on the average. But Chazal, speaking on the average, say, "Le'olam ye adam zar be'onas ishto shemitoch shedim asa metzuya on the asa krova." Women, generally speaking, cry more readily than men, and therefore, if you tease her, you say something bad, so she starts bursting into tears. It's terrible. It's terrible. And you shouldn't think this is a matter of weakness. Oh, you know, the weaker gender, they cry. No. I found, I'll be honest with you, that my wife's threshold for pain is probably higher than mine. First of all, they go into childbirth. Nothing we have in life compares to childbirth in terms of the pain. Kidney stones, they say. Kidney stones, they say. That's the closest thing to kidney. Ever hear a man by kidney stones? They cry like babies. They can't handle the pain. And women somehow get to childbirth. They get involved on purpose, knowing they have a child, and a pill they ploy them. They have a heart. But you can't understand how an emotional pain that you would sort of laugh off and let it slide, how it hurts her. You can't. You can never get into a woman's skin. Impossible. You can never understand how much an emotional barb, tease, insult hurts her. So therefore you say, well, if someone spoke to me this way, I wouldn't cry. I would just walk right away. You can't. It's not fair. You're talking about a different gender, different. So he quotes over here. Sometimes the husband says, my wife is so sensitive. She cries over the silliest things. Pirush Rashi. It's not my fault she's hurt so easily. She feels indulging in crying. It's her problem. And Chazal say, Chas v'shalom. She's not overly sensitive. She's overly hurt because that's just the reality. He goes to a whole aricha. It's a deep psychological point here. There's a whole chapter which is based upon the difference between men and women. Men, he says, are better in tasks requires, yes, psychology, the back quotes, McCobie and Jackman, the psychology of sex differences, Stanford University, 1966, right? And this is a interesting, I don't know how he knows about this, but, all right? He said they're better in spatial orientation, mechanical comprehension, that a woman is more likely than a man to find it difficult to follow a map. I've seen this. A sense of direction. A man, as a rule, have a better, I don't know, obviously there are exceptions. Men, as a rule, have a better sense of direction than women. There are exceptions. I know men who also have no sense of direction. Women who do. But this is by, on average. Verbal skills, women are better. Recognizing, comprehending, remembering words. It goes right brain, left brain. I can't go too deep into this. He says, mathematics, he says. How common it is that on average, he says, men are better than math. He says, he thinks it's based upon the following. It's interesting, the kudu. Women are more practical. They're more practical. They're down to earth. Abstract math is so hard. Anyone majoring in math? One. Two. Abstract math is so far from reality. I also majored in math. Will I have from it? Nothing. I mean, integrals and differentials and oh, whoops, out in the world of the Luften. I mean, probably you can't make a nuclear bomb without it. Yeah, but to get from there to the nuclear bomb, you know, it requires, you know, a lot of different steps, most people don't have. Right, you can't. Of course, you can't build a George Washington without calculus. But Lemaisa, who's going to go from math 1 to build the George Washington Bridge? So yeah, these kind of things are just. He said that's why women are not so readily drawn to Gemara. He says, because Gemara, even if you learn on the most abstract level of Chayims and the Tzoyis and everything, but it's still not so. It takes a while. You're going to learn the Gittin, which is the Meister. Everything we learn is the Meister. It takes a while to get from the Reb Chaim, from the Tosis and the Shvera Rambam down to the brass tacks. That's what he says. Mela. The Gemara says, "Mili the Besa," says the Gemara. You have to listen to your wife. The Purush. Yeah, matters of practicality, you have to listen to your wife. She's better than you are. There's a famous story of Yisrael Salanter about this. The Gemara says that, Yivamas, "Mili the Besa." No, Baruch Metzia. I don't know. "Mili the Besa." You have to listen to your wife. "Mili the Shmaya." You have to listen to the husband. So Yisrael Salanter said, when I got married, I told my wife, I have no fights. I have no arguments at all. Why? It's a Gemara. Mila the Shmaya, I'll decide. And Mila the Besa, the Alma, you'll decide. And he paused. And he said with a smile, we spent our whole life fighting. Our whole life we spent fighting. Why? The other time the decision came up. I said it was Mila the Shmaya. And she said it was Mila the Alma. You know, that's how they quote. In any event, now the very famous expression "Noshim Datam Kalos," which is the source of a lot of critique in some of the feminist literature. He says, "What do you mean Datam Kalos? Women have Bina Yaseira." We said, "What do you mean?" There's an interesting original pshat. He says kalos means light. What does light mean? Light means they're more able to go from thing to thing to thing. They're light. Heavy. We men are heavier, physically heavier, and our das is heavier, which we can't move so readily and so facilely from one to another. We like to be focused on one thing. He says as follows. He tells a story. A man was busy Erev Shabbos. He says, I know you're busy, my dear wife. I'll do anything you want the next hour. So what do you expect? He'd have this job, maybe there's two or three jobs, you know, each time 20 minutes at a clip. He said, what does he have to do? I'm giving a quotation of this book. Hold the baby. Put down the baby to turn off the stove. Bring the mop. Turn on the stove. Pick up the baby. Turn off the stove. Put away the baby and start peeling potatoes. Stop peeling potatoes to calm the baby's crying. Start peeling again. Empty the garbage pail which was overflowing with peelings. Put down the pail to pick up the baby who had begun crying. Clean up the mess caused by his inadvertent overturning of the pail as he picked up the baby. Turn off the stove again. He said he was close to mental collapse. He said he just couldn't handle all these changes. The woman is supposed to do all the time. Dots and collars. They go from here to there to there. They're much more flexible. They can go from thing to thing to thing much more easily. That's what Paro did. Paro says, we'll read in a couple of weeks. Tich Paro Avoda. So Chazal say, give men and women jobs, women and men. They're just different. They're just different. Now, he says, if a man is driven by a phone call, he's more likely to than a woman to return to it after the call. Because he still has that uncovered. He's still in the middle. She gets a call, that's it. If she gets the call, she'll get to come back. That's part of the dat and kalos. That's what he says. The Mela, talk about the home. A man looks at his home as a dormitory. That's what he says. It's a dorm! Come on, guys, he gives you a dorm room. Let's have a new dorm with a new roommate. You have to be a female. But it's a dorm. But for a woman, the house presents her personhood. It's an isha, it's a basis of isha. This is her. This is her. Tells the following story. I may have mentioned this to you before. This is a story, I can't forget the story. He said, I know of a family which was once desperately trying to sell its home. They had to move to a different city or something. So one day, a buyer presented himself. Oh, gewaldig. Ready to sign a contract. But he had to see the house within an hour. Leaving town? $60,000 at stake. In those dollars. The lady of the house refused him permission to look it over. What is it? Her reason? She was ashamed to let him see it before she had a chance to straighten it up. As a result, the deal fell through. $60,000! She wouldn't let a stranger come in to see the house before she had a chance to clean it up. Everyone in this room was male. We said, it's ridiculous! It's ridiculous! It makes no sense. This is crazy. Everybody felt impossible, so she's right. Because that's her. Very few men would react this way. You have no right to get angry with your wife for such a reaction. You cannot gauge the degree of humiliation she would experience by showing a house in disarray. Can't! I should give them coma. Can't do it. Can't do it.
You could rent a pizza with $60,000.
Well, I guess it didn't work. Now, let's go further than that. There are also physical changes between men and women, and within the woman herself. There's a thing called PMS. You ever read about PMS? PMS is called premenstrual syndrome. It has been used as a defense in murder cases. I'm not kidding. If the woman committed murder, and the lawyer said, what do you want from me? She's PMS. Premenstrual syndrome. She wasn't herself. There's certain hormonal, you never heard of this? There's certain hormonal changes in which you, obviously men, can never get into that. It's impossible to even think that way. And that she just is, now, I don't think it's a tour for murder, if you ask me. But Afal Pi Kein, I quote this book. I quote this book. A woman is likely to become shrill, annoyed, aggressive, and impatient with her husband. Intense. So it has a hormonal source. Now, once she becomes a leader, be very careful. You're not allowed to touch her. You can't be close to her physically. But this could lead to a a distance. Now, there's supposed to be a little distance. This is a tight, this is one of the hardest tightropes of marriage. You have to have a slight distance, obviously. Chazal say, the need of hachokas, etc. But it can't be too great a distance. Nobody's just for a mak, you know. My wife's Anita, so I'm not coming home in 2 weeks. That's ridiculous. Yeah, you have to be very supportive during this time. Very, very, if you're so careful in how you conduct yourself. Then there's another thing called pregnancy. It's even more dramatic. She's all worried about how she looks. She's concerned how she looks. And, you know, is she still, quote unquote, glamorous enough for her husband? And let me tell you, I used to think this is a joke. But I had once had a situation of a very, a situation which I couldn't believe evolved. I couldn't believe it. Mom, I couldn't believe it. The people who I'm dealing with, I couldn't believe it. And what the woman said to me was that, well, when I was pregnant, and I wasn't so attractive, so some of the ladies, and I don't want to go into the details. But the kids are, I'm talking now with Shabbos, Shabbos, Smicha, Daf Yoyim, I'm saying people who are, you know, I'm not talking about Stam Hamona. So I learned from that. You learn from experience, you learn from what you hear. You don't learn from what you hear, you're just being silly. But apparently, I thought it's ridiculous. But I guess everyone is different. Apparently there is something to this. The woman feels she's not being as attractive as before because she's gained weight, and maybe the husband might start looking elsewhere, you know, chas v'shalom in any which way. So you have to be so supportive during pregnancy. Now, usually during pregnancy, she's not in either, usually for the whole 9 months, usually. So there could be a greater physical support system, uninterrupted. If the woman is emotional all the time, she can be even more emotional during pregnancy. We all give it to tears. Her body is, just imagine you carrying around a 30-pound weight on your stomach for a few months. And don't forget that early pregnancy is usually accompanied by violent vomiting. I don't know if you know these physical facts, usually. And they can throw up, they can become dehydrated, it's terrible. It's a bracha. A woman who can't have a child is the worst, it's a klala. But it does not without its price. And the husband has to be very supportive. Postpartum can be chas v'sholem, pikuach nefesh. It's this thing called postpartum depression. Okay, so people jump off the roof, rahman al-islam. I once ran to someone's house postpartum. I ran because they said, she's like incoherent. This is a woman who's very, very, very intelligent. You can't ask her to give them coma. My mom just ran. And I said recently, if I would get to call, I'd drive on Shabbos. I would run on Shabbos to this woman to try to calm her down. A very bright woman. A million, because we can't fathom it. And no man will ever have a postpartum depression. It's impossible. You have to be careful to know that these are very serious changes in a woman's body, which men just don't have. Okay, this ends part one of this shiur. We now will spend the main part of the shiur on anger. Anger is terrible. Before I open the book, I always have to learn from experience. I can tell you a story. I was involved in a story, a terrible story, where a man can't control his anger. Rahman al-Islam. You know, ever hear about road rage? I thought it was a goyish azach. Road rage. I thought I'd never see a Jew, if not a firm Jew, who would have road rage. You know what it means, road rage? Ayah, Baruch Hashem. Road rage, I think in its broadest definition, someone who carries out his anger, acts out with a car. And, you know, the guys who, you should know about this, it's Pikuach Nefesh. I once was driving a car right in 181st Street. I'm driving my car, and the guy didn't like the way I was driving. I mean, what happened? I'll tell you what happened. I remember this guy yesterday. I'm driving this way, and this guy's driving this way. There's only room for one car to pass. So there was a certain narrow point. I was closer to it than he was. So I went in. This guy was trying to steer clear of me and sneak past. No way he could sneak past. So instead of backing up, he gets out of his car and starts to rant and rave. But I was programmed. My car was locked, Baruch Hashem. I didn't look at him. Okay. If you look at him, it's a second stafash. Just didn't look at him. He stood there, looked down. He rant and he raved. I had some Spanish curses and everything like that. And after a while, he backed out. And I went and I was there. And I would have backed out too, but don't look at him. It's the kulach nefesh. He had to lock eyes and through the rearview mirror or through the zip. And he saw. And once was a feature article in the U.S. News last year, wrote it. The kulach nefesh mamash. I especially tell my wife and my daughter, it's even more dangerous. You can't, just don't look, just don't. Anyway, the case of road rage. And other anger, the guy says, he admits that he has a terrible anger problem. And it's all kinds of, the guy gets married, he's terribly abusive. There's a different level of abuse. There's verbal abuse, which is bad enough. It can even be, Rahmana Litzlan, physical abuse. Chas v'shalom, the person lifts his hands to his wife. Chas v'shalom. You lose it. So therefore, one of the most important ways to avoid destroying a marriage is to avoid getting angry. The Rambam was no fool, as we all know. But the Rambam describes how a man should react in a marriage. This is in my house, Hanukkah. You may have seen it up on the wall of my house. To remind me, in case I forget. Famous Rambam in Hilchos Ishus gives you advice. Marriage counselor from Maimonides, put up a shingle. Rambam says, can't find it. Rambam says in describing how a couple should conduct themselves one towards the other, he says that a man, once he's married, may not be either sad or angry. Period. Doesn't say sad with her, angry with her. Period. He should neither be sad nor angry. That's a pretty tall order. Why is Rambam saying that? If the woman sees that her husband is angry, she's devastated. Devastated. This is the man I married. He's out of control. What is anger? Did anyone daven this morning? Lo yevcha el zor. Should not be becha in you a foreign god. What does the Gemara say in Shabbos? Another says this is kas. If you have kolak, famous Gemara there, kolak koes ki lo oved avod zor. Why? I say simple pshat. You're out of control. People they simply get out of control. If it's out of control, you can just easily bat down to a yoshka, you can go and yell at a wife, you can ram a car, look at the crazy things, you're out of control. Kas is a terrible, terrible thing. Terrible. Now, a couple came to me some while back, and I think they're getting divorced. And the reason was primarily anger. So one of the things that was brought up was the possibility of medication. Now the psychiatrist is a medication for everything. Medication for depression, medication for this. So maybe you can medicate for anger. So I told a couple to see a psychiatrist whom I knew, who's into medication for things. It was pilpling back and forth with a fellow candidate to medication to take the edge off his anger. Maybe. But it's terrible. Anger is a terrible thing. Now, in discussing anger, the author here quotes the famous story of Hillel. I think most of you know the story. Come on, Shabbos. I'll give you a brief review. Two people made a wager for 400 zuz. They can make Hillel angry. I can make Hillel angry. Hillel's famous for not having a temper. I'll make him angry. It's fine. So how did he try to do it? He waited till Erev Shabbos. Hillel was in the shower washing his hair. And the guy comes up and says, "Who here is called Hillel?" So Hillel comes out with his coat, says, "Yes, my son, what do you want?" "I have a question." Ask my son. "Why are the heads of Babylonians round?" "Well, good question. They don't have alert midwives." Later we went back to the bath. "Who is Hillel? Who is Hillel?" "Ask, what is it you wish?" "I have a question. Ask." Why are the eyes of the Talmudians weak? Good question. They live among sand dunes. Right. Back. Who is Hillel? Who is Hillel? The same thing repeats. I have a question. Why are the feet of the Africans broad? Good question. They live among swamps. Made one last attempt. I have many questions to ask, but I'm afraid that you might become angry. Ask all the questions that you asked, you would ask. Says, are you Hillel, who is called leader of the Jewish people? Yeah. If you are he, then may there be no more like you in Israel. Why? Why? Because I've lost 400 zuz through you. Control yourself, said Hillel. It is better you lose twice 400 zuz to Hillel than Hillel should become angry. That's the Gemara. Famous Gemara. Now, what? This guy was not stupid, this fellow. He was trying to get Hillel angry, and he realized something which I heard from the Rav, that the root of anger is really gava, is really pride. And what does the Rav base this? And the Rambam is always, the Rav is always Rambam. The Rambam says that you have to be, you know, the famous golden mean, the shvil hazahav, that the Rambam recommends in all midas. The famous Rambam. But he's an exception. One exception is gaiva. A person should not be halfway between conceit and humility. Should be totally humble. It's based on the Mishnah. Ma'od, ma'od, hevei, shepal, ruach. But Perish Ramanuch states. The next parak is the Rambam. There's another midah which should stay away from no matter what. Completely. What's that? Kas, anger. Frank the Lecha Mishnah, Steven Rambam. First, Rambam says that you should always have the gold mean except for humility and conceit. Just stay away from conceit completely. Now he says there's another exception called what? Called anger. So mentioned in the previous parak. Answers. The Rav, that if you think about it carefully, you'll find that really anger is simply a subset of conceit, of gaiva. Why? Why? It's very simple. When you're angry, why are you angry? Because you haven't been treated properly. If you're angry at the Rabbanu Shalom, Chas V'Shalom. See? You'll say, I'm angry at God. Why I'm sick? Why? Hey, God, do you know who I am? I am Chaim Ben Shimon. And I put on tefillin every day, and I keep kosher, and I keep Shabbos. Why am I getting sick? Or I can be angry at a parent, or a sibling, or a child, or a spouse. You know who I am? I am Sarah Bas Chana, and I keep all the mitzvahs, and how can you talk to me this way? So anger is really an extension of your sense itself. You have been mistreated according to your own understanding of who you are. And therefore, when we're threatened, we try to destroy others. That's what it means. So the person who tried to anger Hillel understood this, and he tried to get under Hillel's skin. He said, "Who here is Hillel? Who's Hillel?" Can you imagine? You go to the Gadol Hador. Can you imagine? Come on to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Just imagine to the Rav, people who are famous in the world, and say, "Who is Rabbi Feinstein? Who is Rabbi Soloveitchik? Who is? Everybody knows who he is. You know who he is. They're trying to. I don't know who he is. That's an insult. Why do you wait till Friday afternoon? Everyone knows why. It's the worst time. The Mefurshe Gemara on Shabbos. Watch out for anger on Friday afternoon. Why? The most pressure time. Pressure time. There's so much pressure. It's the deadlines. You know, the sun's about to set. And this. Depression, the Furshe Gemara and Shabbos, but the terrible tragedies that evolved because people got angry at Erev Shabbos. It's terrible. When you're pressured for time, you get angrier. Add to this, his hair was full of shampoo there in his shower. If they come outside, probably uncomfortable, cold, and not recovered. Again, then he should feel, I'm doing a mitzvah. Interrupting in the middle of doing a mitzvah. So I feel self-righteousness. All these reasons should have contributed to make Hillel angry. And this guy knew exactly what he was doing. That's why he kept on it. Kept bothering him, repeating the affront once, and the second time, and the third time. Finally, he said, when it all failed, I'm afraid you're going to become angry. What does that mean? He was acknowledging Hillel's moral right to become angry. That's what made him be angry. Hillel didn't fall for the trap. Then he gave him a patch. There should be no one like you in Israel. That's a real insult. Hillel didn't respond. Now, we see, how can we learn from the story of Hillel? Okay. So with this we can begin a very important shiur. This may be the most important shiur of the whole year. How to avoid anger. I'm serious. And it's divided into two parts. The first part is entitled affronts, and the second part is control. How you control yourself. So let's go slow. And it is, again, relevant to marriage, for sure. That's why I'm learning it. But it's also relevant to other relationships as well. And as I've seen from my experience, a man who is out of control and anger against his wife is very likely guilty of the same out of control behavior with others. Unless he understands he can't get away with it. But if he doesn't, he just lets, he can be angry at his parents, angry at his siblings, angry at his co-workers. That's it. So here at Bosai, we come to something called criticism. See, a woman criticizes her husband. It's been known to happen. You're not married long enough. It's been known to happen. Woman, you know, you're doing this wrong. So, whenever you're criticized, it's tough to take criticism. You know that. Take criticism is very hard. It's an affront to your ego. Yeah, I'm doing something wrong. We like to think we're doing things right. So how do you respond, Rabbi Osai? Two classical ways. What he calls justification and counterattack. Justification means, I'm not doing anything wrong. Counterattack means, I'm doing something wrong. You're doing it twice as wrong. Both of them are wrong. Shouldn't respond this way. Here's the following mushroom. A wife asks her husband to buy tomatoes on the way home. And he forgets. So she criticizes him. And if she's stupid, she'll say, you always forget. That's another problem. You don't say you forgot. You always forget. The yom pokti pokarati. You always forget. You always forget. So he feels angry. Tomatoes, which you get so excited. So first try to find an excuse. I didn't feel well, someone got me busy, I was in a rush, it was in my mind, blah, 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 blah. There's an expression in the poskim, Share terutim lo ninalu. The gate of alibis, of answers is never closed. You can always find different excuses. That's one thing. What is a counterattack? Sure, I planted tomatoes. But you forgot the car, and you forgot the key, and you forgot this. You forgot much, much more important things. What should you really say? I'm sorry. I made a mistake. I forgot the tomatoes. Forgot the tomatoes. So I made a mistake. I forgot.
What happens when you tell me? You always say you're sorry.
Problem. That already is a serious problem. That is a problem. Now. Let's say, here's another example. A man asks his wife to stop over at the bank to make a deposit. She forgets. So someone else would have forgotten. Okay. Forgot. Everyone forgets. But if his wife forgets, oh. Yeah. She's not, he doesn't think enough of me. No. Don't think enough of me. He's considered, how could she not do this? How could she not do this? How dare she not do this? Question of ego gets involved. Because let's say, for example, they're working on a project together. He says, building a sukkah. He'll do it this way, she'll do it a different way. And by the way, we're talking about how to build a sukkah. I built a sukkah with my father for 25 years. What do you know about sukkahs? He quotes the Gemara, Adam Barabbas said he lived a long life. He never became upset with his wife over household matters. She should do it the way she wants to do it. She shouldn't get upset. Now, it's very serious because anger, what we call disobedience, is a real disaster. A terrible disaster. A wife should do what her husband asks. It's a reasonable request, for sure. But the husband has to recognize not all of his requests are reasonable. And there's a possibility of forgetting. Forgetting. Be very careful with these things. He quotes over here, and people say, it's the principle of the thing. Principle. And so the guy got the store. A shopkeeper overcharged you by 75 cents. You're so upset, you toss and turn all night. Why? Because you're made into a fool. That's why. Principle is me. That's the principle. I am I'm made to look foolish. That's the principle. A man waits for his wife, she keeps him waiting. We mentioned this already before. Women, I tell you, public is man gross. They don't often come late. I'm speaking from experience. A woman can come late. She's supposed to go somewhere to a chasen, a shever brachas. We make up to leave at a certain time. She's not ready. And you say, if she comes so late, it'll be embarrassing. Doesn't make a difference. Calm down. Open up the sefer. Say tillin. Don't stand there. What happens if you do it? Okay, I'll meet you at the street corner at a certain time. That's dangerous. Try to avoid that at all costs. Because you come on time, you're sitting there, you go and bring it to them. They finish a good portion before she comes. Because she's popping from his mom's grandma, she's busy. And the truth is, you can also be late. You're stuck in traffic, I mean, even a man gets stuck in traffic. But, and then she probably drives slower than you do, and more timidly than you do. She's like, took you 20 minutes because you were driving yourself, so I would have made it in 10 minutes, I would have been here on time. And just don't get involved in these discussions. Unhealthy, terrible. Now, you have to be careful what he calls over here, retaliation for past grievances. So, why are you always forgetting things? That's a dangerous statement. Dangerous. Terrible. This is a story he has over here. Unbelievable story. He had a case over here. They're almost getting divorced. What happened? He couldn't stand this woman. Why? She wasn't from. And she said, he's too from. Sounds like a machlokes halacha, right? But here's the story. He insisted on Shabbos that she should refrain from using a certain type of salt shaker. Let's learn in the Shia once that salt shakers is with rice, they're finding a little Shabbos, it sounds like. We need a little more investigation. Listen to the story. The husband had a history of being embarrassed by his ignorance of the fine details of Shabbos. And she asked him innocently for the halacha in the situation. He said, I don't know. And he was embarrassed, especially when there were guests present. Somebody gave her the wrong ruling, which she subsequently discovered, and she told him about it. This is the background. So, he had lost most of his authority in her eyes. One day, he hears the problem of the soul shaker. Aha! Now I got her. I'll show her who's boss. Don't use the soul shaker. And she said, what do you mean? My father uses the soul shaker. I'm not going to be sad your father's not from enough for me. Not doing halacha here. Not doing halacha at all. So what did he do? He saw she was a soul checker. He grabbed it from her hand and threw it out. Threw it to the other side of the room. You know, we have a chal Shabbos. In front of guests. That's grounds for divorce right there. I do a little Shabbos. What Shabbos? It was Gaiva. I don't do it Shabbos. It was Kass because he was made into she didn't respect him enough. Now, if she would come to me, I'd say, listen, use his soul checker. What's the difference? I'm always a giving in person. What are you fighting about? But there was, I guess at the end they patched it up. But you have to be very careful with these things. Very serious. Every grievance should be judged on its own merits, not cumulatively. 10 years ago, I'm telling you, I can't get a story unbelievable. This is a story, it's not quite a husband-wife fight, it's a sibling fight with parent-child fight, and I happen to be, unfortunately, close to the situation. And I hear screaming, 25 years ago, you did this to... I don't know if I should laugh or cry. They're arguing about things that were done 25 years ago, and they're screaming as if it happened a minute ago. 25 years passed, still angry, screaming, yelling with emotion. Remember the Tosfos 25 years ago? The Chumash Rashi Tosfos. It's a terrible thing. Terrible. I'd like to now go to the next chapter, which talks about controlling anger. Since he said anger is injured pride, you have to reduce the inflated ego. Rabbosai, it's hard for me to tell you to have less, to become less of a Balgaiva. Gaiva is ingrained in human nature. If I'm screaming and yelling and cajoling and begging, I assume all my Talmidim are humble. I have to assume that. I want a Talmud Hogan. But if you have any Gaiva, try to get rid of it. Next, analyze if we have imagined or exaggerated the affront. Usually people either imagine it or exaggerate it. And overcome the urge to react to the affront with anger. How do you reduce gaiva? You have to be a Yirei Shamayim. You have to understand that who are you anyway? I mean, this is a question of basic fundamentals of faith. You were put into this world by Kodesh Baruch. He gave you life. He gave you health. He gave you money. He gave you good things. So you should be so grateful to him. Sometimes we read in the pasuk, you have too much. So rom lebavecha v'shachachnas Hashem alokech. You become rom leiv, conceited fellow. Oh, I have so much success. I can learn so well. I can do so well in college. I can make so much money. I'm so good looking. I'm so this. I'm so that. Who are you anyway? Most of it don't. You should be proud of your accomplishments, yes, but not to the extent you become egotistical, chas v'shalom. Look at Hillel. Hillel was the honor of a tremendous, tremendous honor of a tremendously humble person. We got angry, you know why? He gives beautiful examples. Someone forgot to invite us to their wedding. You know, I had a case in my shul, believe it or not, it was about a quote, Shabbos bar mitzvah. And somebody invited people from the shul. And a guy came over to me and said, I'm insulted. I wasn't invited to the bar mitzvah. I, the rabbi, I should take care of his problems. Like, the kids, I had to get involved in the trenches and have this guy invite two more couples to Shabbos bar mitzvah. I think they're crazy for going. He didn't invite them. Obviously, he didn't think that friendly with them. And they muscled their way in to get invited. Going in Bamish. You're not invited. What's the British on them? I lived through this. It's crazy. Terrible. Go to the whole arena of the Limut's Kos. I'm going to skip now. Maybe the guy's not really guilty. You're not really guilty. You made a mistake, a misunderstanding. Yeah, I love this story. The best way to overcome the urge to get angry is to keep quiet. It's difficult to quarrel with one's mouth closed. Listen to this story, amazing story. A Hasidic Rebbe used to dispense holy water, guaranteed to eliminate all domestic fights. Holy water. Yeah, how'd it work? Whenever a husband or wife had an urge to argue, he or she was told, to hold some of this water in his or her mouth without swallowing it for as long as he or she could. This holy water was, not surprisingly, extremely effective in stopping the squall. I can hold it for a minute, no? Right? After a minute, you calm down. They said a story, I think I mentioned one of the other troubles in the previous years. I think one of the great Bali Musa, who would be angry with the children and want to whip them, you know, give him a piece of his hand. But he said he had a special kapata, which he used to use. He only would whip with the reward certain kapata, which he never wore otherwise. So he'd sit in the house, and the kid would misbehave, talk bad, and then act out, and he deserved a real patch. He said, okay, I'm going to give you a patch. He'd take off his kapata, go into his room, hang it on the hanger, take it off the other hanger, put it in the kapata, better patch. By that time, he realized, well, I'm patch for a better talk to him instead of patching. Getting over that. They say count to 10, you know what they say, but people count to 10 too fast. That's the problem. You know, if you get angry, he says, go into a room and shout and do it in front of the mirror. Listening and watching yourself fulminate and exaggerate will help you to diffuse your anger. Don't respect an angry man, at least in all yourself. But quite possibly you will start laughing at yourself, which incidentally will often be the reaction of anyone who witnesses you when you are angry. You're laughing at him. You lost it. I love this example. The procedures used by a certain department store to handle telephone complaints was instructive. The individual's job it was to handle the complaints was trained to ask a caller if he would kindly repeat what he said, because you didn't get it straight the first time. Caller would, of course, repeat his complaint, would usually tone down his anger appreciably the second time around. The next step was to transfer his call to another operator who would ask him to repeat his complaint for a third time. By this time, the caller had lost most of his heat, and the apology offered by the telephone operator was generally accepted. You don't think so? You get more angry. Apparently he says that apparently he said it works. No, we won't. That's a different story. Then he says, important, if you have to quarrel with your wife, a few rules. Only in private, never in public. But both say, I'm unfortunately privy to cases where people come to me and say, this couple's getting divorced. He is screaming, top of the lungs, throwing pots. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the neighbors hear it. Because you have to live in Muncie, where each house is so far apart, you can't hear anything. But then if the poor people in Riverdale, if they're living in apartments, they can hear from the next door apartment. And I've been involved. You know what's going on behind the door? I get screaming. Never mention or hint at divorce. People sometimes say, I'll divorce you, whatever. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. You can't. It's terrible. Remember, see, even if the quarrel will be forgotten, if you mention divorce, she'll never forget that you mentioned the words. Never. It's a threat to her whole existence. Remember, you'll have to answer for whatever you say. Keep the fight, quote, as clean as possible. Do not use expressions or epithets that will haunt you later. Don't use generalizations. You always stick to the issues. Don't bring up long forgotten grievances. Don't bring up relatives. If you're angry with your wife, don't insult the parents. Avoid psychological analysis. Showing that your wife's problems are incurable or hereditary makes absolutely no difference. You want a happy marriage, not to prove she's psychologically inferior to you. Ready to compromise. Finally, make up as soon as possible after the fight. How do you do it? Three words. I am sorry. Shine. And why you're sorry. Explain why you're sorry. I was wrong. I lost my temper. I made a mistake. Famous story is told about a man who had no money to buy an Esther for Sukkos. and his wife had an exceptional pair of tefillin. She came to us her inherit Yerusha from her darling. She didn't wear it. He had another pair of tefillin. He decided to sell those tefillin to buy an esrog with the proceeds. So he did. Beautiful esrog. Ah! Has it beaming. She says, where did you get the money to buy a beautiful esrog? Tell the truth. I sold your father's tefillin. They weren't being used anyway. What? She had a fit, took the esrog and went, boom! Threw it and broke the pitten. So what did he do? This is the story. Amazing. I wish I was in this madrigal. The man calmly bent over, picked up the esrog, held it to his hand to appraise the damage, was puzzled, didn't say a word. After a few moments, he suddenly began singing and dancing. His wife looked at him, out of your mind? Not at all. And I lost my precious children. I lost my perfect esrog. But I was able to control myself. I didn't lose my shalom bais. Could anything be more reason for joy? Very ridiculous story. Singing and dancing. Very ridiculous story. The Gemara says, Rav Osai, I have to conclude with this. The Gemara says in the Masechta Kiddushin about the futility of anger. Ragzon ein lo ela ragzon usay. An angry man is left with nothing but his anger. Doesn't accomplish anything. All you're left with is anger. What do you think it's going to do? It's going to restore your lost prestige. Prevent a repetition of the affront. It won't happen. It won't happen. Why won't it happen? Because anger, we said before, is an expression of gaiva. And we know the Chazal tell us, kol machazer ala gedula, gedula barachas mimeno. Kol barach min gedula, gedula machazeres acharo. Whoever pursues importance, it escapes him. If he runs from importance, it pursues him. It's a Gemara in Erevin. So therefore, by getting angry, we're not going to be respected more. We're going to be respected less. In general, this is true. Quotes over here from Mefarshim, they talk about the difference between Jewish heroes and non-Jewish heroes. The Jewish heroes, when you look at them a bit more closely, you find out some episodes after the Nifter, you find out unbelievable tzitzis that you didn't even know about. You've heard about these unbelievable things. With often Goyish heroes, you find out later, even when they're alive, like, wow, the guy literally was unbelievable. John F. Kennedy was the big hero of the American people. Unbelievable. Yeah. Why is that so? It's very pushed. Because we, our greats, are trying to hide their good deeds. They often do a good job. They don't even know about it. They don't even know how many chasam they're doing until after they're no longer around. You find out, wow, unbelievable. But the Goyim, they put their best foot forward and they try to hide their faults, and then so they find out later about their faults. This is very, very important. We should try to be very careful about what we do, and you should run away from COVID. You run away from COVID, ultimately at the end, in your lifetime, maybe even after your lifetime, it runs after you. And there's certain people, we had Rabbi Zalman Auerbach, who always ran away from any covet. And when he was Nifter, it was, I think, the biggest Levi in history. I don't know, maybe since the second base of Mikdash. Will they say, anyone who was there, prove that Levi? How many people there, they said? Yeah. 300,000, that they said, maybe more. There's never been such a Levi. But Moshe, there was a quarter of a million. Also, all the commentaries to Gedolim, their whole life they ran away from covet. Whole life. And I didn't realize that. The people who, you know, it's garnish, it's all fake, it's all fraud. So a person should not allow anger to spread. He says, the quote of the Gemara, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that an argument is like an overflowing stream. The more it flows, the wider it spreads. Just stop it, you know, put your finger in the dike and stop it before it starts to spread. Ultimately, now, you're looking at it as a fool. You're a fool. Your energy, your blood pressure goes up, and you're for nothing. And ultimately, if you're talking about the marital context, the Gemara says in Sota, Haiman de Miyaher, Afilu Ha'inchi Beis Lo Mekabel. A prideful man is not even acceptable to his own wife. She wants a wife, her husband's concerned with her. Anger is terrible. Anger is such a terrible, terrible thing. Again, I'm going back to the situation I was describing at the beginning of a marriage that broke up. Marriage broke up. The get was given. And the primary culprit was anger. Anger. And even now in the aftermath, which certainly has to be taken care of, again, the anger is such a serious issue. I didn't spend all this time on anger because of anything else than my realization. I have to confess, I also have a temper. Right? If you don't have a temper, you're born a tzaddik. Right? There are very few people who are born tzaddikim without a temper. Very few. Very few. I wouldn't bet that in this room, there's one person in this room who was born without a temper. It's a lot. We all have tempers. Different threshold, different this. I know my own meter. Took it over 4 meters. My meter is Noach Lichos and Noach Lirtzis. That's what I mean. I'm easily angered, and I get over easily. Some people are the reverse. They're kosher Lichos. They're kosher Lirtzis. It takes them a while to look, they get angry. They hold it onto it forever. But all the different meters. You have to try, if you're like me, which I think most people are like me, really, I guess I've seen through my own eyes. If you're Noach, at both ends, the key is count to 10. Hold the holy water, get the kapata. Do something to get over the original flair that's within you. I think that most of us will recognize that we have that flair. It's a product of our gaiva. We think, oh, well, you know who I am? My child listens to me. Bechule, bechule. It's difficult. It's something which is certainly a chatchila in all aspects and dimensions of life. When it comes to a marriage, it's ma'akim b'diyevet. You're absolutely, if the Rambam says, well, you're right, and you cannot get angry. You're a married man, you just can't do it. If you do it, you have to beg forgiveness from your wife. I hope that everybody in this room will be blessed with a happy marriage, a peaceful marriage, and if chalila v'chas, you ever get angry in the context of marriage, remember that some years ago you had a shir, you spent time on it, and you were warned by a Rebbe that this could be a catastrophe. If that memory will somehow creep into your mind, someone's mind, in some future date, once, even once, and then the time we spent on it will certainly be worthwhile. With the Shabbos. We'll have a minute for those who wish to stay.